This programme was produced at and first aired on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, with support from New Zealand On Air. Ka pai, irirangi te motu, MPR. If you're enjoying this podcast in Manawatu, you could make your very own, just like this one. MPR exists to help people like you tell your story or share your passion on air and online. Check out mpr.nz for more information.
It's time for our Monday Serial, a respectable veneer written by Rachel Doray, published by Upstart Press and narrated by Romy Hooper. This serial has been made possible by funding from the Earl Creativity and Development Trust with collaboration from Manawatu People's Radio. A Respectable Veneer is a story about love and courage, but we remind you of our regular content warning. There are elements of violence and references to child abuse.
Last week, with her nerves strained and goaded by Frank, Ruby blurted out the story of her past, swearing him to keep it secret from Douglas.
Edie took her time splashing across the wet asphalt.
"Other ladies don't have big black umbrellas like this," said Edie, as Ruby pulled her out of the battering rain.
"I'm not one of the other ladies, am I?" Ruby was not in the mood. "Douglas was kind enough to lend us this. You can run ahead and get wet if you don't like it." Edie put her hand in Ruby's as they walked.
"Mum, are we poor?"
With the noise of rain sheeting off the umbrella and beating on the footpath, and cars splashing past, she wasn't sure she'd heard what Edie had said.
"Are we?"
Ruby groaned with shame as much as irritation, and instinctively looked around to see if anyone had heard. She gave Edie's hand a sharp, admonishing squeeze. "Rubbish," she said. People sheltering under a shop awning were shaking out wet umbrellas. The fruiterer was in his doorway, guarding his produce. The rain was blown sideways, slapping at Ruby's stockinged legs, wetting her good skirt where the coat flapped open, while she fought to hold the umbrella. On her leeward side, Edie shivered. Thunder rumbled and crackled on the dark horizon. At an intersection, Ruby was sure she saw the red flash of Madam's car rounding a corner, and a flutter of resentment went through her. What did that woman know of their difficulties? They were about to cross the road when they were doused again as a truck sped through a puddle. By the time they reached the next set of veranda awnings, two of the umbrella's ribs were bent. The heavy coat was heavier, and Edie was saturated.
"Why can't we go back to Madam's?"
Edie sniffed and wiped her nose on the wet wristband of her cardigan. "Because we can't. We're off to buy you some pyjamas."
"Shop-bought ones?"
As they walked, Ruby flexed her aching shoulders under the weight of the coat. "Yes." When they came out of the shop, the rain was petering out. Edie skipped ahead, her parcel swinging by the string, as they hurried to meet Douglas by the library. The evening promised to be clear. People were coming from wherever they'd sheltered, and the footpaths were busy again. Bikes were being wheeled out of the shelter of shop verandas and onto the road. Edie stopped, and Ruby nearly walked into her. She followed her daughter's gaze. Up ahead, a group of men loitered outside a hotel. There was nothing unusual about that, men flocking in to down a few beers before 6 o'clock. She glimpsed the muskrat coat, bawdy, swaggering among the men. Alarm galvanized the cells in Ruby's body. The slope-shouldered figure in an overcoat peeled away from the others. He stood facing them and threw his smoke into the gutter. The prickle of her skin told her his eyes were on her, and on Edie. Even with his face shadowed by the brim of his hat, she knew him. This time there was no mistake. Lou Watkins. She was not prepared when Edie bolted across the road. Brakes screeched, A horn blared as Edie sped to the far corner, hugging her parcel. Ruby heard Brake scream as she raced after her. They didn't wait for Douglas to get out and open the door for them. "Drive! Go!" Ruby shouted, pushing Edie along the back seat with the parcel, clambering in, almost on top of Edie in her panic.
"Good Lord!"
Douglas turned as she pulled the door shut. "Go! Just go!" Ruby shouted.
What's going on?
He stammered, pulling away from the curb. How could she answer him?
"Anyone would think you're being chased."
She breathed again when she saw the trees of the avenue. Douglas flicked a glance in the rear vision mirror at Edie, clutching the parcel, the string cutting into her wrist, and her chin resting on the torn paper. "We had a bit of a fright crossing the road," Ruby decided to tell him.
"A tad undignified, was it?" he said.
"I'm sorry about your umbrella."
"Don't tell me you lost it."
"It got badly bent in the wind for a start," said Ruby. "I must have dropped it crossing the road."
"Never mind. There are worse things in the world."
"Yes."
"Edie's quiet. Not sick, is she?"
"I think it's the shock of nearly getting run over." She leant over and put her hand on Edie's forehead. "That, and she's cold and wet."
"Some of the drivers in this town think they're Alberto Ascari," he said. "You have to be careful."
Outside Frank's house, Douglas reached inside his jacket and pulled out a folded, official-looking paper and waved it in front of her.
"Look," he said. "I wanted to show you this before we go in."
"What is it?" She was in no mood for games.
"This, dear Ruby, is what they call the license of the intention of marriage. We can get on with it whenever you like."
She looked at the document in his hand. "Oh, all right. Good." Behind her, Edie was looking out the window at a boy eating a raspberry-coloured ice block.
"Don't throw your arms around my neck with glee or anything."
Douglas looked disappointed. "Oh, I'm sorry," she said. "It's good." "Good for you," she wanted to say. "Didn't you need my age for that thing?"
27, you told me once.
"Did I?"
"Frank's 4 months younger than I, 31.
A loaded carriage of thoughts collided with the unsettled ballast of her feelings and derailed her. The license of intention. By not telling him the truth about her name, she had made him lie. Would it matter? Bigamists get away with it. "Won't you come in?" He glanced at Vi's house.
Not tonight.
What on earth had made her think it was her prerogative to save these two men she hardly knew from a world full of prejudice and ignorance? Whatever good intentions she'd had when she'd suggested marrying him dropped out of sight and left her frail and helpless. All she desperately wanted was someone to care for her. "I'd better get Edie in," she said. "She's soaked."
"I'm sorry," he said. I didn't think.
She was relieved that he steadied her as she got out of the car. "Don't mind me," she said apologetically. "It's been a rotten day, and I'm tired." The clock in the passage struck the half hour past seven, and Edie had not appeared. Ruby charged into the bedroom and found Edie still curled up, clutching the covers. Get out of bed or you won't have time for breakfast. Ruby tugged the bedclothes away. Douglas will be here to pick us up soon. Edie drew her body into a tighter ball. She was shivering.
I can't.
Her voice was faint, and she pulled at the sheet.
I'm cold.
For goodness sake, that's all I need, said Ruby. Hurry up. Douglas will be here, and you don't want to make us all late too, do you? Out in the kitchen, the kettle started whistling. With the back of her knuckles, she tested Edie's forehead. It was hot, and her breath was so shallow she seemed hardly to breathe at all. On Ruby's way to the telephone, Frank bumped unsteadily against her. His cane dropped. Groaning and swaying, he staggered down the passage. Telling Madam why she wouldn't be at work could wait. Ruby followed Frank toward the porch and the lavatory. Would she have the strength to pick him up if he collapsed? Oblivious to her, he left the kitchen door wide open for his return, and a chill breeze wafted into the kitchen. She took the kettle off the hob. The only thing Ruby could think of doing for Edie was to put a folded flannel, wrung out in cold water, on Edie's forehead to cool her. Whether that was right or not, Edie's breathing eased, and she appeared to be asleep, and Ruby went after Frank. Frank had managed to get himself into the wicker chair, his dressing gown open to the cold, and his pajamas only half buttoned.
You making tea? He said.
Won't be long. Do you want a hand to come inside?
No need to mother me, he said gruffly. I'll get there.
As she made the tea, she knew that behind her he was struggling. His pain emanated from him in waves that hit her. When he did come in, he banged the door shut and cried out as he lowered himself onto the kitchen chair, taking his place at the table. Won't you let me bring your tea to you in bed? She said. Or your armchair?
Can't stand fussing. Just put sugar in my tea for me and leave me alone.
Ruby picked up Edie's mug of water. She didn't get as far as the door when Frank's shout came after her.
Get out! Out! Leave me in peace!
I'm going. Edie's sick.
Tink.
He sat up, alert.
Tink's sick. What's wrong with her? Call the quack, Bradshaw. Number's next to the phone. Don't waste time standing there. Tink!
I'll be in the passage using the phone, said Ruby. I'll be here all day. The doctor told her he'd come as soon as he could. Madam said,
So, I see. Look after Edith, my dear.
Ruby was wringing out the flannel with cold water for Edie when she heard the back door open and close.
Hello?
Douglas called.
Ruby, we're running late.
It took several breaths to register her relief. She heard Frank's voice.
Tink's ill. Make sure.
Then.
Dougie, help me back to bed, will you, dear?
Now, Ruby turned her attention to Edie. The heat of the patient's forehead quickly warmed the wet cloth. Ruby turned the flannel over. Douglas practically carried Frank past her open door to his bedroom. She tiptoed out when she heard the phone being dialed. I've already rung Dr. Bradshaw. Douglas returned the receiver to its cradle.
I'll stay. He gets like this from time to time. It makes a chap feel so damned useless. It's almost more than I can stand. I'm so glad you're here.
He rubbed his jaw.
If only Bradshaw would tell me.
He lifted the teapot lid and peered in.
Thank you. Ringing the doctor, only thing to do.
Yes, said Ruby.
Bradshaw'll give him some of his dope, he said.
Not knowing what to say or do, Ruby put the kettle on again. She'd rather have a glass of gin.
I'll go and sit with him. Sorry, did Frank say Edie's unwell? I thought she looked off colour yesterday afternoon.
Yes, off colour.
By the way, he said at the door, I picked up your dry cleaning yesterday. I forgot to give it to you. Everything seemed a bit topsy-turvy, didn't it? Pieces of coat material, red and some sort of green. Is that right? You owe me 7 and 6.
She snorted. What a clot! How tactless to mention her owing money at a time like this! Her hand shook as she filled the teapot. Scalding water splashed on her hand. Damn! Ruby saw the doctor out and returned to the kitchen. Douglas sat hunched over a cup of cold tea. He got to his feet when he saw her.
Well?
The doctor gave him something, she said. He said he'd be asleep for at least the rest of the day. Douglas pursed his lips and dropped his head, nodding.
Yes, I know.
He sniffed into his handkerchief and slumped onto the chair.
And what did he say about Edie?
She's caught a bad chill. She's asleep. He said to call him at once if I see a rash on her. He wrote a prescription. By the way, here's one for Frank. Seems to be 4 lots of stuff for him.
That'll be right. Give it to me. I'll go to the chemist now and come right back.
There's a prescription for Edie, too. Shouldn't you be out selling brushes?
That'll wait. I have to be here. Frank will need his pills when he comes to. I can't do anything else for him. I have to do something.
Once Frank was settled into his drug-induced sleep, Douglas left, promising to keep popping in. In between trying to make Edie take the medicine and drink boiled water, Ruby ransacked the wardrobe and found an old frock made of grey wool crepe, which looked nearer her own size than that of the late Mrs. Pierce. Like everything else Frank's mother had stored away, it bore the slight odour of camphor. Still, it would do for the day while she washed every garment she and Edie owned. With Edie asleep again, Ruby was working on the red coat when she heard knocking at the back door. Would Vi have the nerve to turn up when she saw Douglas's car leave? No doubt she'd have been peeking through the curtains, watching the doctor come and go. The knocking was insistent. Ruby was ready to send whoever it was off with a flea in their ear. The visitor, wearing a roll-brimmed blue hat on the back of her head, and her coat collar turned up, had her back turned, facing the stockings, socks, and underwear pegged between various items of clothing, along with washed pieces of Mrs. Pierce's material, all waving and billowing the length of the washing line which stretched down the yard.
Aren't you letting me in?
Janice!
I've brought goodies!
Janice dumped a bag of lemons and a kit bag of parcels on the table. There's Coca-Cola for Edie, if she's up to it.
Perhaps when she's better, said Ruby. Thanks.
I'm joining you for lunch.
I see you've already got lemons. Madam insisted I bring some. You can't say no to her, can you? Crikey, what on earth are you wearing?
Ruby laughed, embracing her.
Darling Janice.
You look like something out of one of those dusty old wartime catalogues, said Janice.
And grey.
I adore your hat, said Ruby. Suits you. As for me, how was I supposed to know I'd get a visitor?
When's the doctor coming? Janice opened her lunch tin and peeled back the greaseproof paper. He's already been. Oh, you weren't wearing that horrible rag, were you? It's wonderful to see you too. Tea? Lovely. So, what did the doctor say? Did he give her any medicine? 2 bottles. She has to stay in bed for a week. She's asleep. He said he'll look in on her again, and apparently she's anemic. Fried liver, said Janice. That's what Mum gave me when I was anemic. Ruby didn't repeat the doctor's concerns. Edie was anemic and too thin for her age. Was the child suffered from fatigue? She had told him she didn't think so, without telling him she'd been too tired herself to notice. Want a sandwich? Janice held her tin up. Egg and cheese. I've been putting pepper on like you do. Thanks. Ruby took one, noticing that Janice had cut her lunch into elegant triangles. I hope I don't lose my job over this. You won't. I don't know what I'll do if it turns to pneumonia. I read in a magazine, there's this new craze going around about positive thinking. You've got to tell yourself she'll be all right. Janice giggled. Gosh, I sound like a cheap plumber. The tension of the last few days eased. Ruby was tempted to kiss her. You're a tonic, Janice, you really are. Janice grinned. As soon as Madam told me Edie was sick, I had to come. I suppose Madam expects a report. Don't be like that. Janice glanced sideways, laughing. But yes, she does. Dear Janice. Do hurry up and pour that tea. Janice dropped her voice. What about Frank? Where is he? I wasn't sure whether to get him a cake. How's it all working out? Frank's out of commission too. The doctor gave him something. He's asleep. You've got 2 patients then. Lord, you're going to need all the cake you can get to keep going. Edie might be awake. Ruby poured boiling water into a hot cup. Can I come? Janice bit into an Eccles cake as she left the chair, sending a shower of sugary pastry down her front. I've got some comics and a new book for her. And I want to have a shifty at your room. Janice, shifty? Honestly? Edie's eyes fluttered open. Ruby read the instructions on the medicine bottles for the 2nd time before pouring pink liquid onto a spoon. You have to have it, she said, tipping the spoonful into Edie's mouth. Someone's here to see you. Look at you lying there like a princess, Janice said.
Janice!
Edie tried to lift her head. Hello, love, said Janice. I brought some comics to cheer you up.
Thank you.
Edie's head sank back on the pillow.
My eyes feel a bit wobbly just now, though.
That's all right, love, said Janice. You've rest. I'll leave them here. I'd better get back to work or Madam will tell me off.
Is Mum in trouble?
Not at all.
Janice mimicked Madam's accent and flicked a dismissive hand in the air. Edie's smile was wan. Madam hopes you'll get better soon, Janice told her. Ruby pulled the bedclothes up to Edie's chin. I'll be back in a minute, chicken. I'll just see Janice out. Could I come and see you on Sunday? Said Janice. I know it's probably awkward. Would Frank mind? I've got so much to tell you. Ruby wished Janice could stay, sit with her and chatter while she sewed and dispensed medicine. I'd like you to, but I don't know, she said carefully. You're bound to cheer Edie up, but it depends how Frank is.
What if I give you a call after I see how things are?
You've been listening to A Respectable Veneer, a serialized novel by Rachel Doré, read by Romy Hooper. Listen to the next episode at 8 p.m. next Monday, or for the rest of the series, go to npr.nz/show/respectableveneer or search for A Respectable Veneer wherever you find your podcasts.
If you enjoy this NPR podcast, please consider subscribing. Our podcasts are available on all major podcasting platforms: Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify, as well as the accessmedia.nz app. Support this show and others like it by giving a donation. For more information, go to www.npr.nz/donate.